Welcome to a very special edition of the Fastest 40 Minutes in Podcasting, because Ross is sick, he's at home on a Friday night, and I'm always home on a Friday night, so let's podcast.
Happy marriage.
That's right. So Mizzou wins their fourth NCAA tournament game in 2 years.
What's up?
And we get to watch, honestly, the only thought that came to my mind late in the game was we got to see the very stark difference between a well-coached pressing team and a not as well-coached pressing team. But regardless of the level of coaching, Missouri wins 86-78 on the back of all people, Keith freaking Ramsey. And this was, like I said this morning, honestly, and I honestly meant it, you know, this was anything from here on out is icing because we're back to mattering again, and that's what, you know, mattered to me. And it was really nice to see them play well, to see them shoot over 60% on two-pointers, to see them not take 53-pointers because they weren't hitting them and actually, you know, drive more and get buckets the same way we were afraid Clemson would get buckets. It's just a really nice effort today. I didn't get to see some of the first half because of, you know, work crapping on me. So, Ross, I'll let you give some a lot of your impressions here.
Well, to be dead honest, I mean, it wasn't as, I don't know, as pristine or perfect as a performance as you would have wanted. It wasn't the Memphis game last year, save the huge Tyreek Evans run. It was, although probably the most complete 40 minutes we've seen from this team probably since they left the floor in Glendale last year. Just especially if we're considering how well they played against UConn for the most part last season. The press was working well. They were getting easy buckets in transition. They were hitting their twos. They were still off from three for everybody that wasn't named Kim English or Keith Ramsey. So take that for what it's worth. But if nothing else, it was I don't want to say a subtle reminder, but it was certainly a welcome reminder of what they're capable of, at least.
Yeah, and I do think it makes a huge difference just having one guy making some outside shots. I mean, Kimmy was four of seven. The rest of the team was 1 for 10. The one being Ramsey. But you know, it did make a difference. And, I mean, after going 2 for 10 in the first half on three-pointers, number one, they only shot 7 in the second half. But number two, they really, really made a concerted effort to get to the basket. They shot 16 for 27 on two-pointers in the second half, which is 59%. And, I mean, the only thing that kept it in single digits is the fact that they only went 12 of 18 in the second half from the free-throw line. It was just a really lovely performance overall. I figured we can walk through here. Like I said, I missed the beginning of the game, but just walking through the play-by-play a little bit, just you know, the flow of the game and everything. Early on in the game, you know, DeMontez hits a three-pointer. Clemson goes up 6-2. Missouri makes a little run and looks like, you know, they're looking really, really good. And then the three-point barrage starts. But yeah. At the first TV timeout, it's 10-6, and you know, Kim English already has 6 points. The early impression, we thought we needed to start well today. What were your thoughts after about the first 4 or 5 minutes?
Not great, but not bad. I guess Missouri, as much as anybody else, needs to weather the storm, especially at a neutral site and against a team like Clemson that you know could haul off and put up points if you aren't taking care of the basketball. Kimmy was definitely very much a large part of that, and I guess part of the reason you're confident going forward. If you know it's only Ramsey that's showing up and all the other shots are clanking out, I think we all start to get the here we go again mentality. But they hung around, and you know, at the first TV timeout, would you have it scored 10-9 Clemson?
I believe so. I know, I think at the first one it was 10-9 Missouri, I think is what
they
pulled ahead. I was very impressed with the Rock Him community as a whole, actually, because you know, it's 14-14 with about 6 minutes in, and then Clemson goes on a nice run, a little 14-5 run, goes up 28-19, But for the most part, everybody kind of realized that Clemson wasn't going to make every three-pointer they take the rest of the game. They got hot. And, you know, Stitt makes his second one, and then Andre Young makes one. David Potter makes one. Andre Young makes another one. Noel Johnson makes one. I mean, they just were really, really hot for an average shooting team. And it was kind of worrisome just because they could pull ahead and get a big lead if they kept making them. But it was really kind of unsustainably high. I think that's a word that we've introduced into the Rocket lexicon over football and basketball is just unsustainable. And every other aspect of the game was going Missouri's way. They were playing really good defense, taking on a team that, you know, obviously is used to forcing a ton of turnovers and introducing them to a taste of their own medicine a little bit and just playing better defense and better pressing than Clemson was. And then just trying to figure out the offense as it went along. I was worried at that point, you know, it's 28-19 about halfway through the first half. It's a really fun pace, and obviously Clemson's not going to shoot that well, but the offense was still struggling. Anytime they weren't getting transition, you know, Kim English doesn't look good making that early three-pointer, but it goes in. And, you know, it was really, it was uncertain. I wasn't tremendously impressed with Clemson, but I just didn't know if Missouri was going to have enough offense to carry them, you know, all the way for 40 minutes. And eventually, slowly but surely, that came. So,
well, and here's the thing. What does Mike Anderson always say? Mike Anderson, every single time you try to ask about the offense, even if the defense is horrible and the offense just shows everyone up, Mike Anderson will come into a press conference and say, yeah, well, our offense comes from our defense. And for the first time in a while, the transition, the fast break, the points off turnovers really swung in Missouri's favor, and that was huge.
Yeah, and I think also it is amazing what happens when you stop playing teams that are much more familiar with you. You know, for the last 17 games of the season, Missouri played, you know, Big 12 conference teams, a lot of them twice, a lot of them who have played them for 4 years. Well, I guess all of them have played Missouri for 4 years under Mike Anderson. We haven't had any new conference teams. But you know, Clemson has their own style of press, has their own style of you know, of the game as a whole, and they were not used to, or were not ready for the things that Missouri did, just slightly different than they did. But, I mean, that said, the defense was just harassing. Obviously, that, you know, they gave up some open threes because they were taking chances a little bit. But, I mean, it just wore on Clemson, you could tell. So, Noel Johnson makes a three-pointer from the, I think, the left corner. And Clemson goes up 28-19. Mike Anderson calls a full timeout with 8:55 left in the first half, and I assume lights into some people, because after a Zaire Taylor turnover, it goes turnover by Clemson, layup Tiller, then a dunk by Lawrence Bowers, miss shot by Clemson, and Keith Ramsey makes his three-pointer. Another turnover, and Miguel Paul makes a layup where they pass the whole length of the court without touching the ground.
Beautiful.
Tiller to, I can't remember who, Denman maybe to Paul. And just like that, it's a 9-0 run and it's 28-28. Johnson makes another three pointer, but at this point, the defense really has made an impression a little bit. I believe Johnson's three pointer that he made there was actually quite well covered. And then they, you know, they get that one possession where they miss a three, get the offensive rebound, miss another, like, two putbacks and get the offensive rebound. And then Missouri just says, enough of this, and JT Tiller gets another steal. I think that, you know, even though Clemson still was holding on to a three-point lead, that's when I started to get pretty damn confident that, you know, that Missouri was going to have this game under control if they just got any semblance of an offense. And,
Well, it just seemed to unfold systematically from that point. It didn't really seem like you were counting on any one person to stand up, or there was any one person on Clemson that was just going to sit there and annihilate you like we've seen so many times. You know, Kemba Walker takes over. There wasn't any of that. You know, it was, they were down, and they maybe in the first 8 minutes weren't playing as well as you might have liked. But the thing was is that I guess you could see the seeds being planted for what was going to work out later, which again was something we saw last year, not a whole lot of this year.
Yeah. And then Keith Ramsey takes over. Not only does he make a three pointer, but when Missouri is still trying to figure out what, you know, what they're going to do in a half court situation. Ramsey gets a nice aggressive putback and one, makes the free throw. And then after yet another JT Tiller steal, by the way, he had freaking five of them today.
Along with five assists.
Along with five assists. At this point, you know, Clemson's still making some shots and hanging around. You know, it seemed like every shot they had was either a three-pointer or a dunk on a putback. we head into the game, or head into halftime, excuse me, tied at 39. The offense goes cold again. You know, it's Missouri's up 35-33 with 4 minutes left. They only score 4 points over the last 40 minutes or 4 minutes. But the game seems to be played at a very comfortable tempo and a comfortable style for them. And Clemson, despite the fact that they're also a pressing team, and despite the fact that we heard a lot about their own defense, they just looked a little less comfortable than Missouri did at this point.
Well, and not only that, we saw commitment to the system.
Yeah.
And that Missouri brought the same pressure throughout the entire game. It was unwavering. The players all buy into it, which I guess we take for granted now that we watch another team try to do something similar.
Yeah.
It's clearly not the same, but, I mean, Clemson wasn't completely committed to pressing on the inbounds, it seems. They were, seemed, sorry, I was watching the end of New Mexico State, Michigan.
Who wins?
State. Michigan State is up three with 0.3 seconds left. New Mexico State just missed a couple shots on the final possession, what appears to be the final possession. But yeah, no, getting back to Missouri, Clemson, just saying that, you know, if Clemson was committed to their system, it looked like the players weren't committed to playing today after they saw the way things seemed to transpire. And I guess, I don't know how much of that's on the players. I don't know how much of it is on Purnell not having his guys ready to go. But if nothing else, I guess, you know, it goes back to Atchison's industrial strength before the start of the year, where literally you plug the right guys into the machine and the machine runs. And with Clemson, it seemed like, I guess, the machine was running, but it only ran based on, you know, who was conducting it, I guess.
Well, and I mean, if they shoot their normal 3-point percentage for the entire season, if they shoot that today, they lose by 17.
Yeah.
They were getting by on the long ball. And, I mean, power to them. DeMontez still went 4-for-5. Andre Young went 5-for-8. Noel Johnson went 2-for-4. You know, having three-point shooters going 11-for-17 will win you some ball games. But it definitely disguised the fact that, you know, I love me some BCI, some ball control index, assists and steals divided by turnovers. And Missouri's for the game was 4.0, and Clemson's for the game was 0.8.
Oh, that's tasty.
That was just, I mean, that's exactly, you know, even when Missouri wins, they still, or loses, they still tend to win the BCI battle a little bit. But yeah. 4-to-0.8, a 5-to-1 advantage, basically. Just 15 steals to Clemson's 2. They just, when Missouri pressed, Clemson just looked out of sorts. And when Clemson pressed, aside from one bad Kim English pass in the final minute, when Clemson pressed, Missouri just handled it. And that's where the ball game was won, pretty much, because eventually they started making shots.
Well, Clemson fans were asking us if we'd seen a defense like Clemson in the Big 12, and I guess they were kind of figuring that the differences in conferences might account for something. Did that Clemson defense really scare you much today?
They just didn't look committed to the press. Like, when they were pressing, it was token pressure. They only a couple times were they really, really trying to go all out for steals, and I don't know if that's because they were wary of Missouri breaking their press. I mean, they backed into a half court pretty quickly into the game.
Yeah.
And then they ended up pressing again later. But, I mean, yeah, I think you're right. Missouri was more committed to their style than Clemson was to theirs, and they pulled away because of it. I will say, at the beginning of the second half, I was a little dismayed by the fact that, you know, 4 minutes in, despite the fact that it felt like Missouri was controlling the action, Clemson was still up one.
Yeah.
And Missouri ended up having to call a timeout with 16:05 left. Grant, who I had no idea was related to Horace and Harvey Grant, I really should have. That was very disappointing to find out. He was as dangerous as we were worried that he would be. He had two dunks early in the second half, a couple free throws, and you know, Missouri just went right back to missing shots. They missed a couple on their opening possession before a JT Tiller charge. and they were just, they still, the offense was just not coming as quick, as, you know, easily as I was hoping it would, but it just took time. You know, at the end of the quote-unquote sixth round of the fight, you know, the score is, where was that timeout? I was trying to do this on the fly, and I suck. Well, the score was, I think, roughly tied. I think Clemson was up about two. At the end of the quote-unquote seventh round, Missouri has suddenly moved ahead. They're up, you know, 12 minutes left, they're up 56-52. They get a couple more baskets. Suddenly they're up seven after a couple Mike Dixon free throws. Mike Dixon, who looked awesome today.
Yes, big ups.
And I wasn't sure at this point that Missouri is going to win, but the sequence by Dixon where after he makes a couple free throws, he's late, you know, he doubles Booker, and he's late getting back out to Andre Young, who makes a three-pointer from the wing, and I start to, you know, email the beef and just say, he's, you know, Dixon's still just a step slow on defense, not physically, but just mentally, he's not quite where he needs to be on the court yet. You know, he presses and lets his guy get by him too easily, things like that. And as I get ready to send this email, he makes, well, because it worked, it was a gorgeous long pass. but just, he never ever loses his aggressiveness on offense, even, you know, no matter what just happened. He gets a quick inbounds pass, bombs it down the court to Marcus Denman, who fights two guys for the ball, and dumps it to Bowers for a pretty nasty little dunk.
Yeah.
And Missouri goes up six there with 11 minutes left. And from then on, Missouri always kept their cushion. You know, Clemson got it within a four a couple times, but for most of the rest of the game, from the 11-minute mark on, Missouri was up by between about 6 and 11. And, I mean, I was really worried about the offense, and in the end, the offense scores 86 points. So, you know, I'll take it. The passing at the end of the game, the passing, the free throw shooting, for the most part, and just the ball control was just freaking outstanding over the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah, it's funny. I was joking around with some of the people that were watching the game with us. Is it disconcerting to anyone else that Mike Dixon like dribbles the ball about as high as his head? That always freaks me out in transition. I realize he's in control, but still, something in my mind just can't comprehend that.
I mean, yeah, luckily he keeps such a low center of gravity that he's still only bouncing the ball about 3 feet off the ground. But, yeah, I mean, he really, I'm trying, you know, he makes some bad passes sometimes, he takes some ill-advised shots, but I'm trying to think if anybody ever, like, victimized him off the dribble this year. Like, well, not off of his dribble this year, I should say.
Yeah.
And I'm really not thinking of any at the moment. But, no, I mean, Bowers down the stretch with his ball control. Dixon, Zaire Taylor, just about everybody was just on. And they controlled the ball. They won the game because of it. So, now we get to play West Virginia. I still can't decide. I mean, there are some matchup nightmares for Missouri. And I'm not going to try to pretend otherwise. But there are some... I'm really curious now how... having seen the rest of the Big East perform and knowing that this is a style that Missouri, that Bob Huggins teams haven't really faced since, I don't know, when he was at K-State. I mean, does anybody in the Big East run this kind of...
I'd be lying if I could try to tell you affirmatively.
I mean, Providence kind of runs
I don't think so. And no. If anybody does, it's nowhere near the effectiveness of what they're going to see on Sunday.
Providence kind of runs the opposite style, where they're a full-court press offense, and they score real well, and then they just play ole to get the ball back on defense. But, yeah, I mean...
Suns basketball.
Right. If Missouri can attack and just have half the success defending the ball and getting some steals and everything else, then, you know, they're going to give themselves a shot. I love these games, really, because it's you know, it's no lose now.
Yeah.
You know, if they lose, they're supposed to. If they win, hell yes. And I'm ready. I saw just enough, even though they didn't make enough long range shots for my liking. I saw enough of Missouri basketball today to think that they're gonna give themselves a shot, and that's really all you can ask for when you're a 10 playing a 2 in the second round. And I'm pulling up the, I don't know why, I'm pulling up the box score from today's West Virginia game. This game turned in a hurry. Morgan State, you know, they played kind of the way I thought they would in hanging around early in the game, the first 15 minutes or so. You know, playing pretty good defense, junking it up, keeping West Virginia off the board somewhat. And then they were down 33. West Virginia did only manage to grab 10 offensive rebounds today, which is a little, you know, which is not a tremendously impressive total for them. But they shot, you know, they just overwhelmed Morgan State after a while. They got to the line a bunch. They were 25 for 31 from the free throw line, which is extremely alarming. And they had they had 20 assists. And yeah, I mean, they played a really good game after the first 15 minutes. And we'll see. If they shoot 4 for 15 from three-point range like they did today, then Missouri might have a shot. But at this point, it's just, you know, I'm talking myself into thinking they have a chance, but in the end, it's just, again, it's just all icing again. It's great that Missouri got back to the second round, and now we just sit back and see what else they've got in them.
And it's such a scary thing because you don't want to say it's false hope, but I guess, you know, Missouri raised the bar today. I think it's fair to say that Missouri played basketball like we'd forgotten they were capable of playing. We'd all thought that they were capable of playing the way they did, especially in the second half. And now we almost have to temper it because of we've got to wonder if that's, again, sustainable. Is it sustainable? I don't know. I mean, they can certainly compete with West Virginia, and I think we all believe that. I don't think a large percentage of us are going to take Missouri over West Virginia, but all we want is the fight and chance. And I think what we saw today certainly gives us that.
And I do like that, you know, even if they regress a little bit on defense or, you know, shooting around the basket, they could also very much improve from 3-point range, which would counter some of that. West Virginia is not a great 3-point defense, especially compared to Clemson. And so maybe they get some more looks, maybe. Well, I don't know. I don't know what to think of Marcus Denman at this point. You know, his rhythm looks exactly the same to me when they're going in and when they're rimming out. But
thing that's so great about Marcus Denman, though, is that when his shots aren't falling, he still has a clearly defined important role on the team, just given his toughness. And it seems like he'll make a play around the basket once he realizes that the outside shot isn't going to fall. It's not a lot like Kimmy where, well, outside shot's not falling, so I'm kind of just eating minutes at that point. Marcus is still effective when he's not hitting from outside.
And he did have that one sassy little crossover and pull-up from 17 feet today. That it just, when he does that, when he shows the attitude, the more attitude he shows, the better he does.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how to get him to feel like that more often, but man, I mean, it's just, you get these little glimpses. Yeah. And it's pretty sick, but you know, if he plays better, that'll offset some of the other players who will probably not do as well. Obviously, call me crazy. We probably can't count on another 20 plus game from Ramsey. I know that's insane to say. Very pessimistic, but I'm going to go ahead and assume that Ramsey can't deliver another 20 point outing. But he probably won't have to if others do step up. If the normal people step up. Ramsey and Bowers are going to have their hands full. As I mentioned in the preview of the West Virginia game the other day, freaking every player West Virginia has is at least 200 pounds. I mean, how many do we have that aren't?
They're probably heavier than their football team.
That's right.
Seriously. Especially because Noel Devine is, what, 72 pounds?
That's what I was about to say. Noel Devine really does skew the average down.
Yeah.
But yeah, on average. I mean, they've got, you know, Deshaun Butler, who doesn't play like he is this size, is 6'7", 230. He's never struck me as somebody who's 6'7", 230. I would have guessed like 6'6", 205. But he's a big dude. Kevin Jones is a hoss on the offensive glass. He's 6'8", 250. Devin Ebanks is 6'9", 215. Even the guards, Dale Bryan, 6'2", 200. Casey Mitchell, 6'4", 225. Joe Mazzulla, the defensive specialist.
He's a straight up point guard. I mean, they're saying that the offense with Mazzulla is a completely, completely different offense than when he's off the floor, which to be dead honest, really, really excites me in the fact that he's not 100% healthy. And if you get him flustered with the pressure a little bit, I'm interested to see, A, can he stay on the floor? B, can he be effective when he's staying on the floor? And C, if he goes off the floor,
right,
what happens from there? And does that just kind of feed into the controlled chaos?
I've seen West Virginia play a few times this year. I find it funny that looking at their – well, first of all, I don't know if it's that, you know, they have so many guys whose name starts with D, but I start to get them all confused, and I can't really figure out who the guards are. Because obviously Daryl Bryan is a guard, 6'2", 200, averages 3 assists and 2 turnovers a game. Obviously Mazzulla, if it only 14 minutes a game, although I guess that does seem to have picked up a little lately, at least before whatever injury. He averages, you know, 2 assists and 1 turnover a game. But everybody else, you know, Deshaun Butler is their second, or is actually their assist leader. And he's, like I said, he's a forward. He's 6'7", 230. It's really kind of an interesting style. And I really do, you know, there's nothing to really love about Bob Huggins, the man. But his team's style of basketball has always really been enjoyable for me to watch, even if a lot of it is just dumbing the game down with and being really super physical. I think the key to this game is going to be, like you said, is going to be guard play, whether it's Mazzulla or whoever, because not only, you know, do they have some guys, you know, in Ebanks, in Bryant, who turn the ball over a little bit, but they also play a very, very slow pace. And in the Big East, you can do that. You know, they average not even 64 possessions a game. We like it to be 70 plus. And, as with Connecticut last year, where, you know, until they brought in Kemba Walker, they were absolutely just befuddled by the speed that Missouri was playing, and they got sucked into playing it, and Missouri took a lead with whatever 10, 11 minutes left because of it. And I'm really curious, just stylistically, what happens when West Virginia has to face this system that they haven't, not only have they not faced it this season very much, but now they only have a day to prepare for it.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of tournament basketball and the beauty of Mizzou in tournament basketball, because the style enough is hard to prepare for, much less you're coming off a day where, you know, for at least 5 minutes you were scared by a 15 seed. So, I mean, take it for what it's worth. But again, this is where, I guess, you know, Mike Anderson is a an advantage. It's on the pro side of the pro cons.
Well, with really no proof otherwise, I think we all had the same theory when Anderson came here, is, you know, in a tournament setting, first round game might be difficult, but if you win that first one, you got a severe advantage over the second round team. You know, this year, obviously Clemson had a struggle with Missouri style a ton, despite having a few more days to prepare. But I am curious if Missouri can just shoot 35% or above on three-pointers and, you know, get that press going a little bit, I really want to see how West Virginia responds, playing a faster tempo than they've had to play all year.
And it's intriguing. There's no doubt about it.
And I just, like I said, I love it because I can sit here and tell you all the ways Missouri has a chance. I realize they don't have a better chance of winning than West Virginia does. I'm ready for the game. So I thought, since we've never done a podcast right after I've done the box score for a game, we could walk through the stats a little bit from today and then move on with our lives, since we've somehow already managed to approach the 30-minute mark.
Yep.
Without saying a word about football yet.
Well, we may need to talk a little Big 12 too.
Yeah, I know. That was a plan, and then I just kept rambling. But real quick, first of all, this is going to shock and dismay all of you. We do not have a trifecta winner. The game score, the adjusted game score points for the day were as follows: Keith Ramsey with a hoss 24.8 points, which is just outstanding, because, you know, not only that means not only did he score 20 points, A, he did it on just 11 shots. He was 8 for 11 from the field. And B, I mean, listen to the line. He 20 points on 11 shots. 3 for 3 from the free throw line. 4 offensive rebounds, 8 overall. 4 assists, 3 steals. The only reason he didn't account for more points than that is that other people were playing well, too. Lawrence Bowers, in 33 minutes, puts up 17.5 game score points, 15 points, 15 real points, I guess, on 6 for 10 shooting, grabs two offensive rebounds himself, five rebounds overall, goes 3 for 4 from the line, 3 assists, 0 turnovers, 3 steals. Just a lovely game from party starter. JT Tiller rounds comes up in third in the trifecta with 12.1, 10 points on 7 shots, 5 assists, 5 steals, 3 rebounds. He actually did have some trouble with turnovers and fouls, otherwise he'd have been higher. But a lovely game from Jesus Tyrannosaurus, which I don't think I've ever actually said out loud, by the way. I've only typed. And then 10 points from Kim English, the anti-Ramsey. 20 points in the game, only 10 points on the adjusted game score because it took him 14 shots. But more than that, he had no assists, no steals, no blocks, 2 turnovers. But that's, you know, he's Rip Hamilton. His job's to score and let everybody else do everything else, I think. And so those were the top four scorers overall. But then off the bench, you had Mike Dixon contributing 6.1. Marcus Denman, 8 points on 9 shots isn't going to get you very far, 0 for 5 from three-point range. But he still managed 4 game score points overall because of his 3 assists. Just a lot more contributions than we're used to seeing recently from a lot of different guys. But, I mean, lovely game from Mike Dixon. We got absolutely nothing from Zaire Taylor, which makes me happy that he gets another game to play a little better. But, you know, 3 points. Well, then again, you know, 3 points on 1 shot with 2 assists, 2 steals, and 2 turnovers still sure isn't bad. But, you know, just he did what Zaire Taylor does, I guess. He only took 1 shot because others were making them. He got the ball inside to, or not necessarily inside, but he got the ball to guys like Ramsey and Bowers, who were doing well.
It's quintessential Zaire.
That's
right. He knows when he needs to step up.
And I have the feeling, I would hope that, you know, we're going to need somebody to step up and he'll answer the call. But, yeah, I mean, just a really nice, well-rounded game. We even got 3 points, 3.5 points from Steve Moore, despite the fact that he didn't take a shot. Because 2 steals, a block, and 3 defensive rebounds.
And a charge.
That's right. He's actually gotten pretty good at that. I'm actually... You know, this is a funny game for me to bring this up, but the more I see Moore, the more I start to think that, you know, he can approximate Keith Ramsey's production next year. Well, I mean, like I said, bad game to point this out because Ramsey just scored 20 points. But in general, just the way he really does seem to have taken the first half of this season to figure out what is a foul and what's not. He's not fouling nearly as much now.
Yeah,
he's bodying up offensive players very well. He's blocking at least 1 shot a game. He's just playing really good defense. Obviously, we have to have something from him on offense at some point, even if it's just like one little post move and bucket a game. He's not going to be Ramsey-esque unless he's able to score, unless he's able to get a couple put back, because he grabs no offensive rebounds whatsoever. But I'm much more confident in his ability to contribute to this team next year than I was, a month ago. And John Underwood gets in the game for 0+ minutes in the box score. I can't complain about that since Missouri won, but, you know, Mike Anderson needs to stop teasing us by hinting. This is 2 straight games he's hinted that Underwood and Stone would play, and they really didn't.
I cringed when I saw that beforehand. I really did.
I was all for it. Why not?
No, I'm all for it actually happening. I just cringed that he hinted at it.
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason for him to do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, just, you know, no matter how we go about it, just a very lovely game today. Room for improvement, wonderful identity, and they just, you know, above everything else, Mike Anderson outcoached Oliver Purnell. It was lovely to see. So, going around the Big 12, we'll start with the most recent game, because it, you know, it was the most disappointing for us closet Oklahoma State fans here. Oklahoma State really just makes no plays down the stretch and loses today to Georgia Tech. I got to watch a good chunk of this game. What were your thoughts first?
You know, I was kind of in and out of consciousness as the game progressed, but... It's Oklahoma State. Keaton Page will drill some threes. James Anderson will have some high flying plays, and then they'll play, you know, 7.5 minutes of just boneheaded basketball.
Yeah, and it was disappointing. You know, this is probably the last time we'll see James Anderson in an Oklahoma State uniform, and you know, he scores 11 points on 12 shots, 3 for 12 from the field, 0 for 6 from 3-point range. Keaton Page really did a nice job of keeping them in the game for a little while, especially in the first half. Matt Pilgrim is just a freaking monster.
Yeah.
I mean, he scores 6 points, and I remember all 6. And I don't remember any of say, the points that Marshall Moses scored. Marshall Moses scored a 14. So I just love Matt Pilgrim's game. He's easy to enjoy. Yeah, you there? Hello?
Sorry, lost you for a minute.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, they just, you know, Georgia Tech made plays down the stretch, got a couple defensive stops, got a couple, you know, made their freaking free throws. Georgia Tech is a terrible free throw shooting team. They were 24 for 25 today. So
we need a segue. That'll give us a nice segue if you want.
Yeah, well, I was definitely aiming for it. Freaking Texas.
Yep.
I mean, not that I didn't really have a rooting interest in this game other than, you know, go Big 12. Boy, those are some, you know, for the game, they were 20 for 33 from the free throw line. That's not good, but it's not like it was 30%. But all 13 they missed, it seemed like could have put the game away. And 3 for 8 for Dexter Pittman. Damian James misses the most. It goes 7 for 8, but misses the one that could have clinched the game. Gary Johnson misses 2. Who was it? Jacobin Brown misses 2. I am talking now because Ross got disconnected from Skype, so we're going to try him again in a second. But just a really, really tough way for Texas to lose this game. And, you know, I don't root for Texas by any means, but it's easy to like guys like Damian James, and it just bad way for him to go out. All right, let's try Ross again here. Maybe.
Hello.
All right. I have no idea if that's you or me, so I just kept talking.
I don't know. I mean, my internet seems to be all right, so I don't know what happened.
Right,
there's no warning. It was like, it was just, you were like muted all of a sudden.
Well, I just kept running talking about Texas's free throws.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Damian James goes 7 for 8, but the one he misses.
Yeah.
Gary Johnson misses 2. Jacobin Brown misses 2. Just, I mean, I didn't, you know, this was past my bedtime, but just, you know, it's tough to lose that game. I did enjoy the fact that, you know, Texas loses a 1-point game in overtime, and it was about the 12th most exciting game of the day. just a lovely game mostly afternoon, but to the evening a little bit too yesterday.
Just a lovely day.
Just an awesome day. I love the diverging viewpoints coming out after yesterday. Number one, why wouldn't you want expansion to get more of this?
Ugh.
And on the other side, why would you want to change this?
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. Also yesterday, Kansas is very nice to the Beef's dad and lets Lehigh hang around for a while and really never does make the run you expect them to make.
Like, no, there was never the throat stop moment where you're like, all right, well, screw it.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously at the end of the first half, they pretty quickly went off by 6, and Lehigh was kind of saved by the bell a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, good job by Lehigh of running an interesting offense, getting some open shots, taking the game to Cole Aldrich. And really, you have to figure playing about as well as they could have possibly played. That's all. That's always what you want in a tournament game. Yeah, I mean, I was as impressed by a 16 seed as I can be, I guess.
That's all you can ask.
Yeah, and Kansas certainly didn't TCB as much as Kansas State did yesterday.
Yeah.
I kind of expected this game to be a blowout. I saw that North Texas Sun Belt final. They seem to play Kansas State type basketball only with no talent. No offense, Tepper, if you're listening. I know you love the Mean Green. I know Ross,
they're not good.
But yeah, I mean, they hung around for a little while. They tried to get super physical with K-State, and eventually it just, you know, didn't happen. I think it was like 8-8 or something like that, and then K-State just took over. But, I mean, in the end, a good job representing. Like, neither of the Big 12's highest seeds really threatened to lose at all. And, you know, even Baylor, like, where with upset bids happening all around them, they did take over the game in the last 3-4 minutes. and do pretty well there. And just an amazing convergence of uniforms. What the hell was that?
Sorry, one of my roommates downstairs has some people over.
Wow, that's...
Look, there's a reason I'm up here talking to Bill.
Do you need to go check on that girl, or...?
I'm not sure she has human rights.
Gotcha. No further questions.
Yeah.
Anyway, Baylor, Sam Houston, the most amazing convergence of uniform colors I think I've ever seen in the NCAA tournament. But they really, despite getting really not a whole lot from their guards, they overcame a strangely strong challenge from Sam Houston and took care of business. I think that was all from yesterday, so back to today, since I'm bouncing all around with no attention span.
Yep.
And
what else would you expect from Rocket Nation?
That's right. I mean, you can listen to anybody just talk, but you never know, where my brain's going to go. Really nice performance today by Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Utah State's a stout team. Physical, they've got some good big guys, they've got three-point shooters, and, A&M beat them by 16. They were up 13 at halftime. Just a really, really nice win from a team that, everybody did focus on Baylor, but how much of a difference is there between Baylor and Texas A&M right now?
I mean, explosiveness versus consistency.
Yeah, and A&M has been extremely consistent.
Yeah. Well, and Reese Davis was saying it today, and I agree with him, that A&M remains probably one of the least talked about and underappreciated teams in the field. They were underappreciated throughout the Big 12 season.
I've got to say, as far as A&M goes, what makes them scary, and I think in one bracket, I ended up having Baylor A&M in the Elite Eight like everybody else. I think I even picked Baylor like an idiot, which completely ruins the point I'm about to make. But what potentially makes A&M scarier than Baylor right now is, I mean, they've got the big guys. They've got Brian Davis, who, 39 years old and doesn't really do anything wonderfully, but, just rebounds the ball and pushes your big man around. But Chris Middleton and Ray freaking Turner.
Yeah.
Really kind of put this team on a new level. Like, Dash Harris isn't going to score. He's going to distribute the ball and not turn the ball over. That's his job. Donald Sloan's going to give you some points and get to the line a little bit, although he didn't get to the line today. But if Middleton and or Turner are making their shots, and tonight they were combined, 9 for 12 for 23 points, I want to see how you beat them. I want to see how Duke beats them. Because they've got the guards to match Duke's, and they've got a level of physicality that, I mean, who has that in the ACC this year?
No one.
Georgia Tech, maybe.
Maybe. Even I don't believe that.
Yeah. I'm really kind of curious. Obviously, it wouldn't break my heart if Duke lost in the second round, but I'm really curious to see what happens if A&M, who's really the Big 12's third, fourth, fifth best team right now, probably third or fourth,
yeah.
Takes on the ACC champion and just muscles them around. I really want to see that. I'm not an A&M fan, but I really like this A&M team.
Yeah. this is a beating. I'm sorry.
Well, no, this is, again, you can listen to a normal radio show and get normal things.
Hey, yep.
But all in all, yeah, I mean, if A&M's out-rebounding their opponents and shooting 44% from three-point range and 79% from the line, they're going to go pretty far in this tournament. But, yeah, Chris Middleton, especially today, was just awesome.
Yeah.
Is that everybody tonight? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think that's everybody from the Big 12 in there.
Let's hope so. We need to wrap this thing up, man.
Yeah, actually, no, I want to keep this going. I want to hear what else goes on there.
Yeah, no, we're going to kill this phone call in a little bit.
So, any last thoughts about the tournament as a whole so far?
Other than the fact that it's been entertaining as hell. That's all I care about.
Yeah. Today, obviously, was a step down, but there was no way in hell it wouldn't be a step down today.
Big ups to Ohio, by the way.
Yeah. My wife's still mad at me, by the way.
Oh yeah.
She was doing her picks Wednesday night and I wasn't really mentioning seeds. I was just listing teams and she picked Ohio and I said, no. How about I go ahead and just pick all the threes for you over the 14s? Cause upsets rarely happen there. And so she agreed and then very much, rub that in my face last night. I don't believe her bracket's going too well right now.
Well, mine's doing awful, so we won't talk about that.
That's exactly why
I considered not submitting one.
We also won't talk about who one of the people who is doing well right now, which I just find highly amusing.
No discussion.
We won't go into that. We had some pretty good games today. Obviously, some tight games at least. Georgia Tech, OSU, Wisconsin, Wofford ended up being close. Although I'm kind of glad I didn't see a second of that 53-49 game.
I don't want to watch any game that Wisconsin's playing.
True. Just Missouri wins. We get a really super entertaining first day of basketball. We got some really interesting matchups, just style-wise, in the second round. And just to screw with everybody, go UC Santa Barbara tonight.
Yep, make it happen.
I just realized that California's up on Louisville 22-4.
Wow, I had the TV on and didn't even notice.
My last second change of Cal to Louisville, and that really just reminds me why I never should change my answers. All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed the first ever revealing of the trifecta on a podcast.
Only five more.
That's. I like the way you think. All right. Well, we might have to, depending on how the West Virginia game goes on Sundays, you might hear from us then. You might hear from us later in the week. But I just want everybody to know, this is two podcasts in like 6 days for us.
Don't get used to it.
That's right. Soak it in while you can.
And take the SB Nation survey.
That's right. I saw that.
Please do.
And any other contributions from the party going on behind you? No?
No. All right. Absolutely not.
All right. Well, as we always do, twice after tournament wins, you get to listen to, I believe, unless Ross has a better idea, you get to listen to Brass Bonanza in its entirety.
Well, any of our cleverness, I guess we did with the intro.
That's right.
So hopefully everyone got it. If they don't, then screw you guys.
All right. Well, we will, we'll talk to you guys again soon. See ya.
Later.